You were recommended to help run the last leg of the relay that began with Adam and Eve because your premortal spiritual valor indicated you would have the courage and the determination to face the world at its worst, to do combat with the evil one during his heyday, and in spite of it all, to be fearless in building the kingdom of God. You simply must understand this, because you were born to lead.
Welcome back to the Leading LDS Podcast. My name is Kurt Frankum, the host and creator of LeadingLDS.com, which is an online platform to hopefully make us better leaders in the church. And today is another segment of the How I Lead segment of the podcast, and I'm again excited to have another Relief Society president, Sister Marty Halverson, who's been Relief Society president for 2.5 years, and gives some great advice. Listen in. Marty Halverson is from South Jordan, and she is a Relief Society president. How are you, Marty?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. Well, I appreciate you taking a few minutes and allowing me to pick your brain and discovering all the secrets of leadership. Do you feel like you have them?
I have discovered some and realized that I need a lot more.
All right. No problem. We're all learning together, that's for sure. So you're currently in South Jordan. Are you originally from Utah? Or
I grew up in Holiday, Utah. And my family, pioneer stock, my parents were solid in the gospel and raised 4 kids, and I'm the oldest and we're all active, so I feel like I started out adulthood on third base, having been taught the gospel really extensively. So
good. Well, nothing wrong with that, for sure.
No, I feel lucky.
And you're married with children and...
I've been married for almost 45 years.
Wow, congratulations.
We have 7 kids, and they're all married, and we have 22 grandkids.
Wow. Wow, well, that's great. I'm sure you enjoy your time with your grandchildren. Now, in your upbringing, would you say it was a pretty typical Utah Mormon family that you were raised in, or was there any uniqueness or worth mentioning?
I think it was, I am now realizing that the typical Utah family is unique. It seemed very normal to me. We always went to church. My parents always had callings. It was expected that I would get married in the temple, and I wanted to and did. And so I'd say it was pretty typical.
Okay, cool. And, How would you describe the development of your testimony, your family? You say you're kind of born on third base in regards to the gospel. How did that development of the testimony come in your life?
I had good teachers. I went to my meetings. I always wanted or expected that I would have some big experience with gaining a testimony, and I didn't, and I wondered if there was something wrong with me, that I wasn't having the grand experience that I'd read about. And when I got my patriarchal blessing, it said that I had brought my testimony with me from yonder place. And that was comforting to me, because I thought, okay, I probably won't get this grand experience. But what I have discovered through my life is that I have developed a testimony of individual principles of the gospel as I've lived them. And so my testimony is continually strengthened, and it also can continually go up and down depending on how well I live various principles of the gospel. So it's cool. A work in progress, but I feel like I've had enough experience that if I stay close to the spirit, I know that I know the steps of how to get it stronger when I want to.
Great.
And I also, I don't recognize it in myself as much, but I can see it in other people when we get lazy and it just kind of slips down.
Yeah, sure. And how long now have you been serving as the Relief Society president?
I've been serving for 2.5 years. I was called in a different ward, and then our ward was divided. I was divided off, and so we then had a new bishop, and there were, and he called me as the Relief Society president in the new ward, and then we got a new bishop. So
wow,
after 4 months, and so I'm on my third bishop.
Oh wow.
So it's been 2.5 years altogether.
Okay. And leading up to that calling, what sort of other callings have you experienced in your time of adulthood in the church?
I'd say I've served in most callings. I love every calling I've had, and I really put my all into it. I loved being the newsletter person. I loved being the primary chorister. Loved being young women. I've served about everywhere, and I have always, it's always my favorite calling, whatever I'm in. But my favorite calling right now is for sure Relief Society president.
Well, good. Now, maybe tell us the story. Obviously, on the first bishop you were with, what's the story of you being called there? Was it something you expected? Did it come as a surprise? Did he stop by your house and extend the call? How did that come about?
It was a brand new ward, and it was three wards, sections of three wards put together, and the bishop was young. He was 36 when he was called, and I didn't know him. We were sitting at the very back of the, all three wards met together that were being combined, and we were sitting at the very back. He was from one of the other wards. We'd only lived here for a couple of months, so I didn't know him from Adam. And then the next day, or no, it was Tuesday, he just stopped by my house. The executive secretary, or who became the executive secretary, called and asked if the bishop could come by. And at that point, I did kind of suspect, just because I had had premonitions that I would be called as Relief Society president, but interestingly, I'd had premonitions when I wasn't, too. So
yeah.
I didn't know if this was a true inspiration, but I kind of thought that. And so he just stopped by the house. That was the first time I'd ever met him. And he just extended the call to serve, and I was very pleased, very upset, or overwhelmed, not upset, but overwhelmed.
Sure.
And I didn't know anybody as far as choosing counselors, and I had some really neat experiences choosing my counselors, and didn't even meet them until after we were all sustained.
Oh, wow.
And it was obviously what the Lord had in mind, because they were just awesome.
Yeah.
And so,
and
Coford was just marvelous. We had a friendship that started really fast, and it was very comfortable and easy, and
great.
That was a blessing.
Now, obviously, I would imagine that experience of choosing counselors was a sacred one, and not that you need to go into that, but I'm just curious, what sort of tactics did you go about to familiarize yourself with who was in the ward, who you should even consider, that led to you finally praying about names and receiving a confirmation?
That was interesting, because the bishop at the time didn't even have a printout of our ward. But so he had an old printout and marked the people that were still in the ward, and then he had another printout from the other ward. He'd done the same thing. So I was working with three marked up ward lists, and I had no idea how to start, and I just was looking over the names. There were some that kind of jumped out at me, and I couldn't tell if it was, like, my one of my counselors was Julie Flowers was her name, and I thought the name was just so darling. I couldn't tell if that was just that I liked the name, or but I kept coming back to her, and every time I'd look, she was young. She had five kids. I thought, oh, that's going to be too much, and so I kind of pushed her name aside, and it always kept coming back. I did come down to a list of about 25 just by looking at ages, and it was just totally arbitrary. And then I took that list with me to the temple, and when I was coming out of the dressing room in the temple, I was tucking my piece of paper and a little pencil into my pocket, and the matron lady said, "No, you can't take that." And I said, "Oh, I'm choosing counselors." And she said, "Oh, well, you still can't take it." And so I got up to the celestial room where I was planning to pray about it, and I didn't have my list, so I didn't even know who I was going to be praying about. And the names just came to me, just as solid as it was really
wow
experience.
Wow, interesting.
And they turned out to just be perfect.
Cool. Well, I think that's you said your first step, you just kind of went through the list and just looked matter-of-factly at the life stage they're in, the number of kids, ages, and so forth, and that at least helped you get it down to a handful, it sounds like, that now you can actually pray about something rather than just having this long list of names and you know, other than throwing darts at it at the wall, at least you can narrow it down. So that's cool. Great experience.
I've since had to choose, because the ward was again divided and counselors have been called to other things, so I've had to choose more counselors, and it's scarier, I think, when I know them, because now I'm basing it on personality and how well we get along, and now I know a lot about them, and it's harder to hear the inspiration. So I think that the more we can leave it in the Lord's hands, the better it works out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's a great story. I'm sure I pray for those bishops out there and the leaders that have to go through a ward split or combining with another ward. I'm sure it's a administration nightmare, and then let alone having to get to know everybody and familiarize yourself. And I'm sure you went through that. And maybe that leads into my next question is, now as a new Relief Society president, where not only did you not know your counselors, the women in your Relief Society didn't really know you and you didn't really know them. How did you go about familiarizing yourself with them personally?
That's one of my, I've decided that that's one of my major responsibilities in this calling, is to unify our ward. And so we had three wards. People were, I don't know if the word is bitter, but there were people that were really upset that they had been divided off, weren't with their friends anymore. There were people that weren't excited to have an older segment of the ward put in their ward. There were older people that were bugged that now we had a noisy sacrament meeting. So people were a little fragmented, and we just set about, I decided that I needed to know everybody. And so my goal has been to visit everybody. By the time and I had young counselors with little kids, and one that worked, and so I'm very flexible as far as my schedule right now, and I also found that people that were being visited were were eager, some of them, to share their stories and to open up to me, and they would do that more if I was alone. And so, although that was really scary for me at first, I just started visiting by myself, and I usually visit about 6 or 7 women a week and spend almost an hour with them and just get to know them, and that has helped, because as I have become friends with them, they're comfortable with me, and then they're comfortable with each other because they see that I'm comfortable with that person. I don't know. It has.
Yeah.
We started out with 147 women, and then a year and a half later, when the ward was divided again, we had 300 women. So we had so many people that we were trying to unify. And then we, in the new ward that we just started in September, it's exactly the same situation. Whole bunch of people that I didn't know and didn't know each other, and so we're starting that same process.
Wow.
Over. But the I think visiting, teaching, we have tried to mix it up so that older women visit younger women, and we've really, really worked to try to build a sisterhood, and our lessons are a lot about getting to know each other well enough to confide, treat each other like sisters, call. We've got a newsletter that's an email newsletter that comes out that I think has helped with Spotlight. But that's been our biggest challenge.
Interesting. So I imagine that you're just constantly, or you've continued that habit of visiting weekly.
Yeah, that's what I do most.
I see.
That's what I do. That's
okay.
My job.
Good. It seems like a valiant effort. Now, is there a certain way you keep track of who you're visiting? You just have a list that you go down, or?
I have a fabulous assistant secretary who's over my appointments, and she has set up this thing on Google Drive, and I don't know how to describe that other than it's called an appointment tracker, and she set it up, and so I tell her the people that I'd like to visit, and a lot of times it's because of things that I know have happened in their families. That's kind of how I'm choosing, or that they're new in the ward, or that they've been sick, or a specific reason. But then if that doesn't fill up the list, then I just kind of add in people that I know from the list, but I don't, or from the role, but I don't know them personally. And so she just sends out texts or emails or calls. Kind of, we have a variety of people, ages, and how they like to receive communication. And so the text ones, you can tell because they never call back, and so they'll respond to a text. And anyway, so she just has kind of a running appointment thing, and I just look on it every week, and she usually emails me and or texts me and says, you're visiting so and so at 2, or and so and so at 3, and so and so on Thursday. And I tell her I say I can visit Tuesday between 2 and 4, and I could visit in the evening if somebody needs that, and I can visit Friday, or we just kind of do it week to week.
Sure. Well, and maybe we've covered some of the your 5 keys of leadership, but as I do with every interview in the How I Lead segment, I've asked you to put together 5 key leadership principles that if you had a time machine and you went back 2.5 years and spoke to yourself, these are the 5 keys that maybe you'd tell yourself or other Relief Society presidents at that time. So let's start at the top. Number one, you said, determine your direction and invite others to follow. Elaborate on that.
I am a mission statement type person, and I always write a mission statement for anything I'm doing. And I feel like for this calling, a book that I read that is just has been so helpful to me is called To Lead as Jesus Led Us by Eric Stephen and Wayne Pace. And it just reminded me of so many things from the New Testament, just observations of the way Jesus did things in his everyday life. Like, for instance, he's walking and talking and laughing, and you can imagine that he is spending time getting to know these disciples. They have plenty of time walking, and so they become friends and they trust each other. That's just one of the things that it elaborates on. And so I use that book, and I also use the handbook describing the Relief Society responsibilities and my patriarchal blessing. And I articulated a mission statement that was based on the goals outlined, as well as what my patriarchal blessing talked about as my personal strengths. And so I always ask myself, what do we want to have happen? And I just thought, okay, it says in here that my patriarchal blessing says that I have the gift of counseling. How can I utilize that? How can I develop that? How can I learn how to use that? So I came up with a mission statement, and then we talked about it at our presidency meeting. So that's, we go over it every once in a while. And I feel like the more the Relief Society sisters know what we're trying to have happen, the more involved they'll feel. And our mission statement was, I see us as real sisters in constant contact with each other, strengthening and supporting each other. We network together for increased motivation, additional help, giving compassionate service to each other. We encourage one another by noticing the good in homes and families, bearing testimony of the gospel of Jesus Christ in times of joy and discouragement. Our ward is a safe and holy place where we stand together against the evils of the world. So,
wow, that's poetic, Marty. That's great.
So anyway, that just becomes our kind of what we're working towards.
Now, do you read that during Relief Society every once in a while, or how do you keep it as a focus in the eyes of the sisters?
I gave it as a, I used it in a lesson right at the very first of our stewardship, and you've mentioned it in presidency meeting, but just as I was preparing for this, I was thinking, I'm teaching in August. Maybe I had to bring it up again. When I remind the sisters about visiting teaching each month, and I kind of refer to this, and we have a poster that has some a phrase or two from it. But I think that they might not remember that this is it.
Yeah. So number two, you put cultivate strong friendships, and I think you've given a few examples of that already with your consistent visits that you do as the Relief Society president. Is any other ways?
I call people, and I pray all the time to remember. I'm getting old. I'm 64, and I can tell that. Well, maybe I'm just losing my mind, but I am also forgetful, and I can't remember people's names, and I introduce myself to the person who I just visited on Wednesday and spend an hour with, helped her take care of her sick kids, and then that Sunday I say, oh, now are you and our ward, and so on.
Hey, we've all been there, Marty, no problem.
But so I always pray to remember the sisters' names. I pray to remember the story, just so that I can ask, how did that work out? Did your dad get out of the hospital? Whatever. I am in a position in my life that I don't have to hurry. My daughter is a Relief Society president. She has four little tiny kids, and her life is just full of lessons and all those kid kind of things, and she would not, her stewardship would be very different than mine. And I'm sure she's called for different reasons. But for me, I have time. And so I figure I don't want people to feel like, oh, you're too busy to listen to me. I want them to feel like, oh, good, you're here and I can tell you my story. So I try not to be in a hurry. And another thing that I have learned to do, I wouldn't have ever considered myself a huggy person. I didn't like to be in people's space, and I have turned into this huggy person that I hug everybody, and I just tell everybody that I love them, and I feel it. It's totally sincere, but I find that everybody wants to be loved, and if they feel acceptable and lovable, then they respond, and that's been a huge blessing to me to become friends with them that way.
Yeah, you know, I have I've contemplated in my mind whether I need to be a huggy person or not, but I also don't want to come across as creepy as the bishop that goes around and hugs everybody. I think from the Relief Society president, it's you know, it's almost assumed you can hug whoever you want. But
I think there's an advantage. There are a few advantages with age, and you know, if I was some 30-year-old,
yeah,
then I think people wouldn't be that thrilled. But
that's
if
true.
I'm a grandma, I think that I can hug people. I can hug the guys too.
Yeah, and my state president does such a good job at just hugging people, and he does it out of love, and you know, nobody ever is offended by it. And I think I need to try and hug more, but it's something that I probably shouldn't force. I don't know, but I'm glad you're hugging. It goes a long way in leadership, I think. All right, so number three, you said lead with encouragement.
This is a phrase I took out of the book I mentioned, but send the message to the people that you're helping. Be of good cheer. It is I, your friend, your neighbor. Don't worry, I want to help. And I think people respond to kindness, and I try never to be demanding. I feel like this is a volunteer organization. If people don't do their visiting teaching, you know, I'm not their boss. I am here to, if they don't come to the activities, I never judge something by how many people came. Like if 10 people came, then it was fabulous for those 10 people. And it was worth it for those 10 people. And if nobody came, then wasn't it fun that our presidency just got to hang out together? And I just feel like we're going to encourage everybody that this is, we're offering the program that the Lord has outlined. And that's our job. And I also like to treat people as individuals, and I want to just encourage everybody that, hey, you're doing a good job. You're a good mom. No, the way you handled that was wonderful. I loved your comment. I appreciate your being here.
Yeah.
That's kind of my philosophy.
Yeah, just when you don't know what to do, just love, and you'll more than likely be right almost every time, you know.
And I think that if we have fun, I try to laugh and smile, and I want people to have fun, because I think we go to the things that where it's fun, and where people make us feel good, then we want to be there. Now, I figure that goes, luckily I have people that are, but I'm not a ribbon kind of, I'm not a ribbon tablecloth kind of Relief Society president. And so all of that kind of stuff, to me, that isn't what gets, a lot of people spend tons of time on making sure that the tablecloths match the napkins and stuff like that to make it just lovely. And I think, great, that's great. But for me, I go back to a place because of the feeling I got from the people that were there.
Yeah, that's great. Just because you're released cited prison doesn't mean you have to be crafty, right? And
I'm not.
Yeah, and some people are just naturally that way, and so they do it, and it doesn't take them a lot of time.
And them as your counselor.
Yeah, there you go. Delegation, perfect. All right, let's see. That was number four. Number five, remember this is...
Or I just have to say that...
Oh, go ahead.
Help others succeed, and I think one of my huge roles, I just had this born witness to me with my first bishop, and now I'm on my third, and I feel like it's so important to support the bishop. I feel like he's the one with the huge stewardship over this ward and huge weight. And I don't want to ever be in his way as far as trying to change things, or I want to support him in however I can.
Yeah.
And therefore I want the women to recognize the good he's doing. I had a chance to be up at camp for one day last week, and I took the chance in Relief Society to tell the women what kind of service he had rendered, because I think a lot of times bishops are just serving constantly, and nobody knows what they're doing, and then you have people saying, oh, well, he's never visited me, and that kind of thing just drives me nuts. I want everybody to know how wonderful the
sure.
bishop is.
And I, like you said earlier, you've kind of taken it as a personal mission to be the unifier in the ward, and what a great role that is, and personal mission to especially help everybody be unified in supporting the bishop, who obviously probably isn't doing a perfect job, but there isn't too many bishops out there doing that.
Not fine, yeah.
we got to get him on the program. We got to.
He's doing the best.
Good, good. And the last point you put is, remember this is the Lord's work. Use the Lord's methods.
Yeah, I feel really strongly that if we follow the handbook, if we pray, if we read the scriptures, and I've been learning to hear inspiration. I realized that I used to jump right up off my knees, or my mind would wander during my prayers, and I would be trying to get back to whatever I was trying to concentrate on. And I have now realized that maybe some of that wandering was a chance for the Lord to give me some inspiration. And if I kind of paid attention, maybe I'd get that inspiration. And I need to listen to my counselors and people, because they are receiving inspiration, and they are, if they're sharing it, that's exactly their role, and I ought to recognize where it's coming from.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, Marty, is just simply going back to the basics and using the Lord's methods. This is something I really struggle with, is sometimes I really try and reinvent the wheel. You know, I want some dynamic idea and program or some motivational prescription that we could put in place that's going to just change the tide and so forth, and I keep reminding myself that there's nothing, as President Packer has taught, to paraphrase, you know, he said there's nothing more motivating than the doctrines of Jesus Christ. And if we just go back to those basics of prayer, scripture, and help these individuals know how to gain guidance from those things, that's really where the change and the leadership comes from. So those are great.
Well, and some of the stories that, or the quotes and things that I'm looking for, it's always amazing to find out that, oh, look, if you use this scripture, it says just what the quote says, but it says it better.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. And it's been there the whole time.
And I just didn't read it.
Well, good. So maybe let's talk about just your day-to-day. What's a typical week look like for you as far as, starting Monday morning throughout the week, if you have meetings, or obviously you said you do a lot of visiting during that time, and then what's a typical Sunday look like for you?
Well, Sunday, Once a month it's ward council, and once a month I go to PEC. I wasn't invited to PEC under my first two bishops, but this bishop has me come. And so that's at 7:30, and then we have the 9 o'clock block. And so, and right after the block, I meet with the bishop every week, and that is very helpful.
Oh, wow. So what, is it just for a few minutes, or?
It can be a half hour, or it can be 45 minutes. It can be.
Oh, okay.
It's a real meeting. I mean,
yeah.
It's not just how did it go.
Okay.
Know? And I kind of, if he's doing something, I'm flexible. I'll just, you know, he'll just say, do you mind if I set her apart, or do you mind if I give her,
yeah,
whatever. But he has, he sets that time aside to meet with me, and that is, we just go over things, and I think that has made us a good team.
Hmm.
I feel like I'm very involved. I feel like he knows what I'm doing, what I'm worried about, and that he's sharing in that, and I like that.
Wow.
Then during the week, we have presidency meeting. I usually visit a couple of days a week, but it wouldn't be all day. It would be just kind of maybe two on Wednesday and one Wednesday night and one on Thursday or something like that. It would be kind of when my secretary can line them up. And I usually have a couple of food orders that I do during the week. And I do talk or text the bishop probably two or three times a week about just if we need signatures or different things like that. I talk to my compassionate service leader about once a week, and we kind of coordinate who needs meals or who needs help. And I get together with my visiting teaching supervisor once a month, and we do that. I try to, I put everybody in my phone that and put their birthday. So it pops up on their birthday, and I either text them, or most people I just text. And it's no big deal, except people respond, and even people that don't ever come. It isn't just happy birthday. It'll be something so that they know that I actually typed it. You know?
Yeah,
but
sure.
Short, and it's easy for me to do. We have a birthday party once a month for the people that have a birthday that month. We just have cake, and so it's a small group of 8 to 10, and we get to know each other that way.
Wow, great.
So that's pretty much...
That's your typical week, huh?
Uh-huh.
Good. So, and you've alluded to some technology that you use. Like you said, you text your bishop, which is fantastic. Not every Relief Society president or bishop can say that they actually text, but man, it sure makes things easier. Then your assistant secretary utilizes Google Drive to organize some things, to correlate on specific items of visits and so forth. Any other technology that you use in your presidency or in the Relief Society?
I use my phone constantly. I have an iPhone. I use it for calendaring. I have LDS tools on it. And then I've just got, and I use the little, I don't even know what they're called, little notes, so that I have little categories like bishop, ward council, presidency meeting. So as things come up, I just type it into that.
Oh, one. Okay. So a note-keeping app of some type? Okay.
And so if I have my phone, I have everything. And that
nice.
Helped me a lot. I did not know how to do all this when I became Relief Society president. My first bishop taught me to text.
Oh, wow.
And my bishop now, he's my age, and so he's old school too, but he has learned since he became bishop. He's totally into the... In fact, when we talked the very first time, he said, I don't text. Do you want to email? He said, I'd rather call. Let's just do it on the phone. And then he got a new phone and kind of started texting, and I think he's totally converted.
That's the fast way
to do it when you're in different meetings, and, you know, it just helps.
Yep. Cool. Yeah, I think every leader out there, if you don't know how to text, it really does, speed things up some through communication channels at times. All right. Well, let's move on to the big elephant in the room when it comes to leadership in the church, and that is, in your case, visiting teaching. What are some general thoughts you have on visiting teaching, and things you've learned about managing it and so forth?
Well, my big thought about visiting teaching is that it would save the world. I really think that it would, and it just is so frustrating that we have this program, home teaching and visiting teaching. I think it would just solve everybody's problems, but we have to start where we are, and it's not solving everybody's problems, it's creating lots of problems. We're always working on it, and we have, when we took over in this ward, the last summer, the visiting teaching numbers were low, like in the 40s, and this month we had 90%. I'm pleased with that. I'm not that into numbers, except that it indicates that people are being contacted, and I remind people, I send them some clever, funny little reminder every month, just on email, and we remind every Sunday, and I call a lot. If somebody hasn't been visited for a couple of months, I call their visiting teachers and say, do you know them? Can I go with you? We had an activity where we seated everybody in their districts, and that didn't really work out as much as we thought it would, but we're trying to get the supervisors to take more responsibility, to call and remind. What I figure is, if the women could understand how important it is, and so I have given lots of lessons and little stories and stuff about how I need to, that the bishop is responsible for every one of these sisters. Even the non-members, he's responsible for them. And there's no way he can keep track of them. And we have to do that, and I have to do that. And so if they will take their three and just make sure that they are alive and well, and anyway, we talk about it all the time. But it's hard.
Yeah. That's a good way to sum it up. It's just hard, you know, But sounds like you've got a good approach, and you're seeing some success there. So
I feel like we're seeing some success,
and not that those successes are defined by just an arbitrary number or percentage, but it's really what you feel in your heart as far as the pulse of the Relief Society and how they're responding to those visits and whether they're getting done. So that's great.
Interesting how people will, you know, oh yeah, I did my visiting teaching. Oh yeah. And then the person, my visiting teachers never come. I don't even know who they are.
Yeah. Sure. Sure. Yep. Well, Marty, I sure appreciate you taking the time to allow me to answer or ask you some questions. And as you said to me before we started recording, you know, that you're grateful that you're hearing some women on this podcast, especially on this segment of how I lead, and I truly do want to give as much time to the Relief Society presence as possible. And so I hope as other Relief Society presidents listen to this interview and learn from your thoughts. They'll also maybe be inspired to share their own. And I think it's a fun way to learn from each other. So just one more question before we end. And that is, Marty, how has it been, you know, serving as Relief Society president as a leader? How has that, this process and this calling and your service made you a better disciple of Jesus Christ?
I think watching how the Savior is working in the lives of the sisters, I can see better how personal his blessings are to these women and how unconditional his love is and how everlasting it is. And then I can apply that to myself and realize, wow, he knows me. He really knows me. And I've realized that because he's so acquainted with our situations, he's giving us opportunities to succeed, and he wants us to succeed. And I feel like the commandments, the covenants that we make, instead of, I used to feel like they were kind of restrictions, and now I see them as opportunities to become more like him. That they're tools that help me become more like him. And I also see how far I have to go, and I've come to realize that that's what the atonement is for. The atonement makes up the difference between the woman I am and the woman I want to become. And I think I've just become more aware of how much Savior loves us, and it's been a huge blessing in my life.
This concludes the interview with Sister Marty Halverson. I hope it was beneficial. I learned a lot from Sister Halverson and hope to apply some of those thoughts. If you, while listening to this broadcast, have thought of additional ideas or things that you've tried, make sure to go to the comments section of this episode and share those thoughts. Let us know what you think. Now, while you're there at leadinglds.com, be sure to join the Leading LDS community at the very top. Click on the button, put in your email address, and we'll be more in touch of ideas and resources that are available to LDS leaders. Thanks again for listening.